I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, Back Talk, where you tell us what you have to say about the stories on the show this week. Your calls and blog postings are next. But first, it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about whatever's in the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, editor and civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, media executive Nick Charles, and Ruben Navarrete, a syndicated columnist. I know the guys have a lot to talk about. I may jump in, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey,
doing
Jimmy.
Good,
what's
Jimmy?
Up?
Doing good.
All right, well, I'm afraid we got to start the shop off on kind of a sad note. Washington Redskins Sean Taylor was shot during a break-in at his home in Florida. He died later from his injuries. And, of course, our condolences go out to the family and friends of this young man, shot down at the age of 24. Now, Ruben, is it just me, or does the media always presume the worst-case scenario when young black men get shot?
No, I don't think it's just you. I think that's true, and I think that the added dimension of this is professional athletes. You know, if you have a story about a professional athlete who ends up getting shot, there's a history there in various sports, whether it be boxing or football or basketball, of folks misbehaving. And so I think when they hear that, they jump to a conclusion automatically that, oh, if somebody got shot, it must have been during the commission of a crime, like maybe a holdup or something. In this case, it was a case of a victim. He was somebody who apparently, according to the reports, had his house broken into. He fends off the attacker, and he ends up getting shot.
Nick, how do you feel about that?
I'll give you two statistics. One is that 85 out of every 100,000 black men between 15 and 24 in 2004 died from homicide, compared to the national average of 6 per 100,000. Oh. The fact of the matter is, it is an epidemic. And, you know, whether he's a victim or he knew his attacker, or, you know, with the details are murky, the house was broken into a week before, someone left a knife on his bed. Because of the news every night and the toll that happens every day of young black men dying en masse, automatically the knee-jerk thing to think is, oh, my God, there's another one.
Arsalan, so having listened to Nick and Ruben, so this couldn't be a random act of crime?
Well, it could have been, but, you know, Antrell Roll, who plays cornerback for the Arizona Cardinals, who's known Sean since he was 6 years old, and they played at the University of Miami together, said that, you know, he did fear for his life. And I think that what saddens me the most is that, you know, we hear about Sean Taylor because, you know, he was number 21 on the Washington Redskins. If he was a social worker, you know, in the streets of Philadelphia who got murdered, you know, we probably, you know, wouldn't even hear a blip on the radar.
Mm-hmm. Do a lot of these cases go unsolved? I mean, I know we haven't found Biggie and Tupac's killers yet. I mean, Arsalan, what's up with that? I mean, are we not worth investigating?
Well, I think that's a very valid question. I think that a lot of times the police, you know, point to the lack of leads or the fact that there are too many leads, especially when you're dealing with a high-profile right. victim like that. But I also, you know, do think that, you know, it is symptomatic of the pandemic there. You know, if this was a white quarterback for an NFL right. team, you know, we might be finding a lot more expedient justice.
I think another reason stories like this are noteworthy is because you remember our conversation about Michael Vick not long ago. And this notion that somehow, for better or for worse, the narrative was here was somebody who left, who was from one world, and he went into the world of professional sports and these million-dollar contracts and endorsement deals, but he never left the other world behind. And so now applying it to this, I think that a lot of folks look at these individuals as having, you know, the golden ticket, this God-given ability, this talent. They make a lot of money at it. And we hope that somehow that will allow them to be pulled out of those circumstances. You want to know why it's newsworthy? That's why it's newsworthy.
But
it's man bites dog.
What world was Sean Taylor in? I mean, his father was a police chief. He went to, you know, private school.
Again,
why is he supposed to be from the hood? Well, I don't think he was.
Well, but I mean,
I think there's talk that he led this kind of a hood life. And I think we're just going to have to wait for more facts to unfold. And in the meantime, we're just going to have to send our condolences out to the friends and family and just wait for the facts to come out. But more from the world of football. Inexplicably, Ricky Williams, former marijuana enthusiast, quote fingers up, and seeker of knowledge, has found his way back into the NFL. Nick, now, for those of us that don't know about Ricky, can you give us some background?
Well, you know, the Texas Tornado, as he used to be called when he played out of the University of Texas. Great running back, but a bit of a flower child. Very shy. He used to give interviews with his helmet on and a visor so he wouldn't make eye contact. He came into professional football. He had the skills. but he doesn't have the temperament. And yes, he liked to, you know, burn a couple of weeds now and then, and that doesn't that does not jive with the NFL's policy. But
okay,
you know,
well, the law.
Right. Well, well, oh no, but, wait, hold up. He actually went to California and got a dispensation for medicinal marijuana, so he was able to smoke. And then he said he stopped smoking so he could get back into the NFL.
You know, they let all-pro linebacker Ray Lewis back into the National Football League after he was acquitted of manslaughter charges. They're thinking about bringing Pac-Man Jones back into the NFL. And so, you know, to give Ricky the, a hard time because he smoked some of the wacky tobacco, I think, is a little bit is a little bit rough.
Let's keep it moving and talk about the NBC series on the concerns of black women this week called African American Women, Where They Stand. And I think there's one standing in the studio. Yo, Michelle. Michelle, I know you got that juicy clip right about now, right?
I'm just wondering whether you all are going to lie to me and tell me you actually watched the series or what. I mean, did you all watch it?
I did.
Did
online,
watch it?
I watched it. I watched it in split screen while I played Manhunter on the other screen.
I watched it. I watched some of it online because I think if you blinked, you missed it on the on the news.
This is a short clip from the NBC series on African-American women, and this is Angela Burt Murray. She is the editor-in-chief of Essence Magazine.
I mean, the African-American woman has always been the caregiver and the nurturer for the community. So even as African-American women continue to excel, there is obviously significant concern about how her brother is doing. And she wants to see, even if it's not, you know, a personal relationship with her, she wants to see black men do well.
Well, what did you think? What did everybody think? Is it, I'm just curious, like Arsalan, if they did a series on, I don't know, what would you say?
Well, no, I thought it was
Muslim women and where they stand.
I think it's great, you know, just because, you know, we happen to know how empowered African-American women are. I think that that doesn't necessarily mean that the American public knows that. And I don't think that it's a story that can be told enough. I'm sorry.
Sure.
In one of the stories, it said that African-American women make up 30% of the Democratic primary voters in South Carolina. I mean, that is a swing vote.
No, see, I agree with Arslan's point, but I think this is one of those, you know, every so often they discover a group. And here you have black women, and they're much more important than 3 minutes every night for five nights, as opposed to having some really in-depth ongoing coverage of what their lives are like.
It's a, I don't know. Ruben, what do you think? Well, if it was this whole, like, single you out as
Latina
a group,
thing.
Latina thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, we do it. Like, there's a Latina magazine. There's Essence magazine. There's Catalina. There's Aubrey. There's, you know, on the other hand,
I mean, that's
the mainstream does it, though. It's kind of like, ick. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of have mixed feelings about it. My first instinct is to say what Arsalan said, which is it's more the merrier. You know, we need to hear the story more and more. But I think when you start getting into a demographic, in this case, black Americans, and you start splitting that up into pieces, then it gets a little hokey. I mean, somebody got the idea of doing African-American women. They could just as easily have done African-Americans under 40 or over 40 or whatever.
Step light.
You know, so.
Where are you going with that?
So I think there's lots of different I guess I'd feel the same way if they did a special on Latinas. They said, well, you got these 40 million, 44 million Latinos in the country, but let's just take a look at the women. No, let's take a look at the men. No. I mean, once you start splitting it like that, I'm not sure you're accomplishing all that.
Well, I think you split it for black women for the simple reason they're far outpacing the accomplishments of black men, particularly in college and with businesses.
Jimmy, what do you think? Well, I'm afraid to ask, actually. What did you
think? I think there's a difference. I think there's a difference between, you know, a news program doing like a niche marketing thing. And this kind of passes for me as colonial anthropology, as must-see TV. And I'm not down with that.
Right.
I'm not down with that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, CNN is doing the same thing called Black Men at Risk. They got something they're kind of ratcheting up. And, you know, for me, it's like they deal with black people and they deal with blackness like it's a disease that has to be studied. I'm not down with that. You know, I mean, we're here.
It's interesting because it's like being kind of in the newsroom, so-called general audience newsrooms, where you're kind of like, okay, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you don't do these series and people think you don't care, and if you do, and then people feel like they're under the microscope, like you were saying, like, why do you need to study me? Like, I'm not a bug. You know?
It has to be done correctly and with sophistication, and it can't be done in a stereotypical way.
Well, you know what? This is me. I'm that dude. And I thought the healthcare information was really timely, but you know what always trips me out about these programs is I'm wondering where all the happily married black women are, because only the women that can't find men good enough for them manage to find camera time.
Ooh, you didn't say that.
All right.
Jimmy.
It's the women's fault.
You're going to get fan mail.
Direct all calls. And
they're out there.
Jimmy. I'll be forwarding all the mail to Jimmy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, well, check this out. Now, speaking of people singing tired songs, yo, singer Alan Waddy sings a song about wishing he was white so he could experience true freedom.
You want to hear
now,
it?
Now, wait a second.
You guys want to hear it?
I know we got
it?
A clip.
You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Here it
Yo,
is.
Yo, bounce that clip right about now.
Sometimes I feel I wish I was white so I could feel just how it feels to be treated right. I'm not ashamed of me. Just one time I wanna see how it feels to be treated equally. Cause I have learned to face the fact I'm never gonna be treated right as long as I am black.
Wow. Now you know what?
Boo,
I think that's
boo.
Michael Jackson on the low, but yo, Nick, this Allen cat, do you think this is you know, any kind of thought-provoking satire, or is just kind of one young man's cry for help?
No, I don't think he's that off base. You know, it's kind of parody, it's kind of satirical, mm-hmm. it's kind of funny. And we all of us sit around talking about white privilege. Well, he's just put it in a song and said, okay, white privilege exists, so maybe I want to get that as opposed to being a black person, because obviously black ain't working for some folks.
Wow. Well, black ain't working, that's like you take it back to the electronics store and say, I'd like to give this back.
Exactly.
For me.
The R, yeah, he just dropped it.
Well, you,
hey, I'm just not...
You know, aside from sounding like a, you know, throwback to the Jodeci days, you know, I think that it's kind of like Weird Al Yankovic, you know, singing about Eat It. You know, it's funny. You understand the message that they're trying to get across. I think it's harmless, and I think it's got a pretty decent hook to it.
Well, you know what? My favorite song, the song that had a good beat with a great singer and something you could kind of hum along to. Yo, Michelle, you got that for me right about now?
Oh, yeah. Here it is.
That's what I'm talking about.
The Godfather. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
That was kind of my question. Don't both of them feel a little dated? I mean, aren't we back beyond both songs? It just feels musty to me. I don't know.
Why does it feel musty, Michelle? Do you think we're in a post-race age?
No, I don't think we're in a post-race age. I just think that the way we talk about these things has to change, because you keep having the same conversation over and over again. People don't want to hear it.
I agree with you. We need new paradigms. But I think, unfortunately, we're locked into language we know.
But were you sitting around the Thanksgiving dinner table talking about white privilege? I think not.
I was talking about white and dark meat.
Okay, well, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Hey, now.
Very fair. Very fair.
We got to call it a wrap. Fellas, thanks so much for showing up to the shop. And I got to kick it back to the lady of the house, Michelle Martin.
All right. Jimmy Israel joined us from WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida. He's a freelance writer and reporter. Ruben Navarrete writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He joined us from KPBS in San Diego. Arsalan Iftikhar is a contributing editor for Islamica magazine and a civil rights attorney. He joined us from our studios in Washington. And Nick Charles is the vice president of digital content at BET.com. He joined us from our bureau in New York. You can find links to all of our barbershop guests at our website, npr.org/tellmemore. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep.